progressive ideas, conversations from schools, and the newest concepts in education. This is the School Leadership Podcast.
The social model of disability is our focus in this episode. Hello, and welcome to the School Leadership Podcast from NAHT. The model seeks to redefine disability to the restrictions caused by society when there is inequality and shortcomings in social and structural support. The social model aims to do a wide range of things. One such outcome might be rendering stair climbing unnecessary and therefore adapting to specific needs, making the disability negligible. The model, of course, has been adopted by the NAHT, and our Senior Equalities Officer, Natalie, examines a wide range of the implications and just how transformative this can be. You're about to hear her in conversation with someone who specialises in an extensive working knowledge of the model.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Natalie Arnett, and I am the Senior Equalities Officer at NAHT. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Emma Cosman, who is a Policy Officer at the Trade Union Congress, so the TUC, and she leads on LGBT plus and disability workers. So I'm absolutely delighted to have Emma here speaking with us today. And we're going to be looking and focusing around the social model of disability. And this has come about following NHT's adoption of the social model. And we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about what is the social model, how does it apply, and what does it mean for trade unions and the work that we do, how might it be applied in schools.
Hi, thank you so much, Natalie. Thanks for having me, everybody. And that's such brilliant news that NAHT has adopted the social model. So I'm the LGBT plus and disabled workers policy officer. So at the TUC, work closely with those two committees to take forward policies set at conferences. And the social model is a really important part of our approach to supporting disabled workers. So the model itself was developed by disabled people over the last 40 years, and it really aims to identify and take action against oppression and exclusion. So it's a way of viewing disability, but it's also a really empowering way of thinking about and driving social change. So it sits really well with the trade union movement, naturally. And at the heart of it, the kind of central idea is really that people are disabled by barriers. So what that means is kind of the barriers operating in society that exclude us and discriminate against us as disabled people. So those barriers might be things like social attitudes, or they can also be like things in the physical environment that we, you know, might be used to thinking about, things that prevent equal access. So like steps rather than ramps, but also like much wider barriers. So to do with information being provided in the wrong format or not in enough format. And kind of the other, just to contrast the social model to other models you might hear about, so you may come across terms like the medical model and the charitable model of disability in particular. And these are really the older models that can be quite upsetting, and they shape how the UK government has approached disability. So those models will generally portray disability as an individual's problem, or kind of disabled people needing curing, or is either sort of needing pity or like inspirational martyrs you come across sometimes.
Brilliant. Thanks, Emma. I think that's a really helpful introduction to what the social model is and how it kind of differs from other approaches. So obviously we've adopted it now as an organisation, as a union, and kind of wanting to filter that out into how we approach the work that we do. So it'd be really good to hear from yourself about kind of why is the model or kind of this approach really important, and how have the TUC or unions utilised it in supporting workers?
So the key like phrase that you often hear about the social model is the nothing about us without us. So that approach is is that disabled people should have choice and independence and meaningful input into any decisions being made about us, which is like really the same principle with any kind of marginalized group. And I think trade unions are a really important vehicle for that kind of like democracy and bringing decision making as close as possible to the people like affected experiencing these things on the ground. And trade unions, of course, are a really important space for like practical on the ground change in workplaces. So that might be negotiating policies that set out like a zero tolerance approach to ableism, or it can be helping people to get reasonable adjustments put in place, which would be, you know, a really tangible example of reducing those barriers. So that's the main way that we can act with the social model at the heart of what we do, is really making sure that every disabled worker gets the reasonable adjustments that they need to do their job, you know, which is their legal right to have those reasonable adjustments in place to make sure that the needs that they have around their impairments are met. We really can be thinking about how workplaces are designed to have particular barriers and to exclude workers with protected characteristics.
Thanks, Emma. And I think it was really interesting how you're talking about putting disabled workers centrally and making sure that they had that voice. Started last year, we have a disabled members network. And that really is very much on the premise of it being led by our members for our members. And it's really about amplifying the voices of the disabled members within NHT, and then also providing support information and networking opportunities. And that makes up one of a number of equality networks that we have. So it feels like that's kind of one of the opportunities that we're kind of helping to demonstrate that kind of commitment to the social model, which is really positive. You talked about the some of the barriers and the fact that the model was developed nearly 40 years ago as a way of kind of thinking about disability differently. And I think then obviously in terms of campaigning and garnering change as well, it still feels like there's maybe some work to do around kind of getting over those barriers. There's still a need for this model and for that education piece, possibly around reasonable adjustments. Would you say that's something that you kind of hear through the work that you do, Emma?
Yes, definitely. I think that there are, you know, there's just not that much knowledge about reasonable adjustments, about the social model, and in particular, where this kind of comes to the fore a lot is in the language that we use to describe disabled people and our issues. And that, you know, that really matters, because a lot of the kind of words and phrases that are used in this space are really informed by those kind of negative, a bit outdated sort of pitying models. So there is a lot of language that just like a few things that I wanted to highlight. So you often find people be described as vulnerable. And I think the word vulnerable is just one to really watch out for, and just to be more specific. So, you know, why are we saying that people in any particular group are more at risk? Just being really comfortable to use the word disabled as well, because, you know, it is a word that people in the community have a lot of pride in. So with regards to COVID, for example, instead of saying like vulnerable, which obviously the government's language, we'd say, you know, at higher risk of infection. So it's just like being really clear what is being described. The kind of main thing to know is to use the term disabled people or, you know, disabled pupils rather than people with disabilities or pupils with disabilities. And the other kind of social model term that you will hear a lot of is using the word impairment, and that's to describe, you know, for example, if somebody has fatigue, or, you know, if somebody is blind. So that impairment can be used, you know, for whatever the kind of individual's physical, sensory or cognitive differences are. And then the word disability, that's what's caused by the barriers in society. So you talk about disabled people who have impairments. We've got lots of kind of longer language briefings, and there's a lot of information online as well, which we can maybe share some of the links.
Thinking then about, I suppose, some of the the practical pieces, kind of going back to that bit, we touched on what you might do to support workers. But I suppose, obviously, a lot, you know, our members are school leaders, they're working in schools, they're supporting pupils, but they're also supporting their staff, and they themselves might have an impairment, might be a disabled school leader. So I suppose, how might the social model apply in schools? And are there any really practical pieces that we could kind of give to school leaders that they might wish to consider in kind of taking this, you know, and kind of thinking about the work that they do in it from a social model perspective?
Yes, absolutely. So I think schools are really important spaces and communities where we can be sharing these ideas. And as you say, are also, of course, workplaces, employers. So it's really important to make sure that disabled educators and other school staff have the adjustments that they need, especially, you know, thinking about the pandemic and kind of exposure, you know, knowing that key workers had a lot of higher rates of developing long COVID. Those are all just really important at the moment. One really practical step, which people might not have come across, is our reasonable adjustments passports. So this is a live record of the adjustments that have been agreed between their employee and their manager. And the TUC has a publicly available template and a template policy that can be used and, you know, adopted in schools. So that passporting system can mean that if people move roles or change line manager, they don't have to explain and kind of renegotiate all of their reasonable adjustments all the time, which we know is a real fear that is something that happens. At a policy level as well, we are calling for a legal change that would require public sector employers to offer those reasonable adjustments. So, hope to see lots of schools leading the way by putting those in place.
One of the things that we hear is that kind of some of the difficulties in kind of some of the barriers for employers in terms of achieving reasonable adjustments. And I suppose it would be quite good to hear from you, because I've spoken with some organisations about that, actually, you know, supporting reasonable adjustments. Often there isn't there isn't always a financial cost to that, and actually many reasonable adjustments kind of cost neutral and quite easy to implement. And some of that's that kind of conversational piece. Do you have any sort of suggestions around how you might kind of facilitate that conversation or kind of explore different options kind of led by the disabled leader or disabled staff member?
So what we hear a lot is that people will kind of make a request and then just either not hear back for, you know, months and years, or just sometimes never hear back. So one thing we're calling on the government to do is put a time frame in for when people should like hear back on their adjustment request. And requests can be, you know, things like needing equipment or flexible working. That might be, you know, regular breaks, for example, to ensure focus or to be able to take medication. You know, there's a whole range of like what, you know, there's as many ways to be a disabled person as there are disabled people, and different things are going to work for different people. And I guess the best tip for getting your reasonable adjustments in place, which is definitely going to be preaching to the choir, is to reach out to a union rep who can kind of make sure that you have that official backing for your request as well.
One of the things that we've had quite a lot of conversations with through our disabled members network is around kind of a cultural piece and having more conversations about disability within education, particularly from a kind of not so much from a pupil's perspective, because there's obviously a lot of work going on around that, but from a, you know, as a disabled school leader, as a disabled staff member, you know, are there any tips to building a really disability inclusive culture within a school, within the kind of a working environment, to kind of open up some of these conversations?
Thank you so much. I mean, I'd love to hear all of your members' reflections on that question as well. I think, like, coming through the education system, as we know, is often like really fraught for disabled pupils, which is, you know, not to say that educators aren't doing an absolutely wonderful job against really like tricky circumstances and under incredible demands and not enough funding. I think the best thing that was said to me that like stuck in my head as a positive thing while I was going through school was like a really simple phrase, which was all bodies are good bodies. And I guess that, you know, applies for bodies and minds. But I thought that it's a really helpful thing for like a really helpful message that there might be some good, you know, resources and talk to be found around that. But I think it like touches really well on a lot of the different biases and difficult things that children and young people are picking up on from society, you know, around ethnicity, around disability, and just, you know, across a lot of different protected characteristics. So I think that like all bodies are good bodies message is really helpful.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Emma. That's been hugely informative and I think a really great introduction to the social model of disability. We will put some links alongside the podcast for those who want to find out a little bit more information and some of the resources that Emma suggested around language and obviously kind of to reflect that obviously us adopting this approach is just kind of the start of the journey and members will see and hear a lot more about the social model and that kind of approach that we're taking forward in the coming months and years.
Thanks so much for having me.
Natalie Arnott from NAHT in conversation there with Emma Cosman of the TUC. Thank you as always for listening to the School Leadership Podcast. All of the episodes to come from us can easily be yours by just clicking on subscribe on the app wherever you normally access the podcasts that you like to listen to. I'd also ask that if you can spare a few minutes to leave a review, a rating, some feedback, that would be wonderful. It will be much appreciated. NAHT is a professional association and union for school leaders. To discover more about the benefits of being an NAHT member, go online to nahtorg.uk/join. On Twitter, our handle is @NAHTnews. We'll see you next time. Take care.